Moshe. Meaning to say, obviously Moshe didn't play a role. I don't mean it in that way. I mean, you could, well, you know, there's a lot of different aspects to the story. You know, you can focus on the role of Aaron. Aaron was involved in one way or another. So that's an interesting issue. I mean, all the Mefarshim take it up. How could he possibly, you know, partake of this kind of a thing? Why didn't he resist to the death? Because this is Avodah Zarah. All right, that's not the question for today. But it seems that the problem was triggered off by the delay of Moshe. Moshe Shmoshe Laredes. So that's clear. I mean, from the psukim. So what was the idea behind that? What was the idea behind that? Well, let's tie this in with another factor, and that is the breaking of the luchos. That's also a problem, because when we may be returning to this theme again sometime. I'm just mentioning it now, because there's a lot of pieces in the puzzle, so to speak. So I may refer to one piece now, and then, but I'm not doing the whole puzzle now. I may come back later on when we do the whole puzzle and see where it fits in. But I just want to isolate it. That is to say that one of the questions that you can ask is, why did Moshe break the luchos when he came down from Har Sinai? Now, you can't say it's because he discovered something that he didn't know before. Because the fact that the Jews were involved in Avodah Zarah was something that he knew. Because God had told this to him when he was on when he was up on the mountain, sort of communicating with God. So God told him about that. And let's see, where's that? Kisisa, I don't have the... Basically, that's what Moshe... The reason why God told him was because at that point, the plan was to destroy the Jews. Yeah, that's in Lamed Beis. By Davar Shal Moshe Le Melech Reid. Kishichei Tamcha Shalaisa Me'eretz Yisrael. So after the Torah describes the event of the Egel, so Hashem tells Moshe to go down, because the nation has corrupted itself. Soru Maher Min Adarach Asher Tivisim. Osu Lahem Egel Masecha. Vayishtachvu Lo Vayizbuchu Lo Vayomru Eila Elohecha Yisrael, Asheh Elucha Me'eretz Yisrael. So that's a summation of what the Jews had done. So then God says, Re'isiyas Amazevine Am Che'orefu, V'yata Hanichali, and now, leave me alone, V'yichar Api Behem V'achalim, V'esa Otzcha L'gagadol, and I will make you into a great nation. Plain shot, at that point in time, God's message was that he was going to destroy the Jews. That this had been a failure. Obviously, of course, God doesn't fail and all that. We're not taking up that issue. And that should be viewed no differently than the Mabel. That God, so to speak, regretted that he had created man. I mean, a person cannot take those things if very careful. Person cannot take those things in any kind of a anthropomorphic way, any kind of a literal meaning that God could God could fail. That's another, well, they said a thing like that. That's not a zara. But it's we've explained that God has relinquished, so to speak, his power over one aspect of the creation, and that is the perfection of Adam. That God has given Adam this power to determine for himself whether he shall live or whether he shall die. That's what the whole Torah says. I've given you esachayim v'esatov. I've given you the life and the good, v'esamaves the Yesara, death and evil and death, Ubachata, you have to choose. So, obviously that means that if you choose evil, so you're choosing death, so that's destruction, so that's it. But that, of course, cannot be imputed to God, because once you have a system of Bechira, that's it. That's the way, that's the will of the Creator. That's the way God wanted it to be, that we should be the instruments of our own perfection. So, I'm just saying that so that, because these things are constantly recurring. That here we find that God chose the Jewish people and he took them out of Mitzrayim and so forth, and now he's prepared to destroy them. So a scoffer, could say, what's going on over here? How could this be? It's very, very interesting, by the way. The thought just comes to mind. Take a look at Pasuk Yud Beis. Well, what happens next is that Moshe prays. That's also interesting. That's also Vayichal Moshe. And Moshe beseeched God. Vayomer, Lomar Hashem Yechara Avcha V'yamecha. Why should your anger kindle against your nation? Asher Hotzeitzo Me'eretz Mitzrayim. That you took out of Eretz Mitzrayim. B'koach Gadol of Yod Chazaka. So Moshe now begins to petition Kadosh Baruch Hu, which is also interesting because you would think that once God pronounced the decree, so that's it. How can you argue with God? But nevertheless, Moshe does. I mean, you see from this that the reinforcement that God relates to us on the level that we're at. So that provides the basis for the possibility of tefillah, of tshuva, that Chazal say that even if the sword is on a person's neck, he should not be miyayish, he shouldn't give up hope. Because, you don't know, we don't know. Well, the specifics, sometimes there is such a thing as it's too late, and there is a situation where it's not amenable to change. I mean, you see Moshe Rabbeinu with all his tefillos could not get permission to enter Eretz Yisrael. But nevertheless, he tried until God told him, "Al Tosef, that's it. Don't put any more energy into this." But over here, Moshe was nisbarel. So the very fact that he's nisbarel is a recognition of a fundamental. That it's true that God decreed it, but God made this decree on the basis of a certain existing reality. If this is the reality, then this is going to be the reaction. But if the reality changes, now Chazal point this out in Pasuk Yud, V'ata Hanicholi, and now Hanicholi, leave me alone, which is a very strange expression.
He's giving Moshe an opening.
Yeah. We haven't yet heard that Moshe is being misfalo. That is to say, Rashi says that statement would be appropriate if Moshe was being misfalo. So then God would say, Anichali. V'lomer Anichali. Then it would have made sense. Ela kan posach lo pesach. But here God opened the door. V'odio shadavar tali bo. And he informed him that it all depends on him. She'im yisparu aleihem lo yikolem. That if he would pray for them, then God wouldn't destroy them. So that idea is alluded to in that. I mean, in a sense, you could say, but that would seem to go contrary to what I'm saying. You understand why?
No.
In other words, when I introduced the point, I said that It's a universal truth that God relates to us on the level that we're at. So that would seem to indicate that you could always pray. What do you need this hint? Over here it's saying that God said Hanichali. So therefore Moshe understood that there's room. You follow?
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, you could say, so you could question me and say, so 1 second, so then it's not a universal, it's just this particular. But I'm saying both are, that the particular reflects the universal. Except that in certain situations, when there's been a serious chait, and God has pronounced this the chalon af, that is the strongest expression that the Torah ever uses with regard to God's, so to speak, anger. So that in this situation, it could be that Moshe needed to know that there is room. If it's the case that it's final, that like in the case of the Mabul, when God condemns and you have the final indictment, so there, it does reach a point where there's no, that's it, that there's no room for change. So I mean, it's not a contradiction. It's based upon the truth. It's based upon the true idea. But over here, there was a certain encouragement of Moshe Rabbeinu that he should be mispahol. Okay. Now, what is the essence of the tefillah? Lama yama mitzrayim lemar. Bira'ap hotiyam la'rog osam beharim. U'l'chalosa me'al p'neho adama. Shuv mecha ra'apecha v'inochem ala ro'al yamecha. All right. Now, we can analyze that, but it seems part of that is based upon what I said, that lama yomru mitzrayim. The argument of Moshe was not on the actuality, but on the fact of the perception, that there was the perception. Because what they're saying is not true. I mean, that they would say that the whole thing was a failure. That God's plan was a failure, that he couldn't fulfill his plan. His plan was to set up a nation. So he took them out of Egypt. In that aspect of it, he was very good. But in terms of the other aspect of going beyond that and bringing them to the promised land, so to speak, in that aspect, he was a failure. So, now, that's not true. Let's ask ourselves that question. You know, do we care? A lot of times a person is doing something and it's misinterpreted. Like if you're doing something which is an ideal, which is the correct thing, and other, you know, people will say, no, you're doing it because you want popularity or whatever. Let's say you're involved in a project and you're getting a lot of publicity for it, but you know that the yod lishma, but you know that that's necessary, because the only way you can get the assistance is to do it this way. So, but people are saying, look, people are going to accuse you of being a publicity monger, you know, or something like that. So you'll say, look, well, what do I care what people are going to say? I know what I'm doing is right. Or if you, any person in a position like that, any person in a position of leadership, of power, whatever, is always going to alienate people if he does the right thing. You know, if he has to enforce certain rules, in terms of halacha, in terms of demanding that people act a certain way and criticizing certain behaviors. So he's always going to open himself up to criticism, and people are going to distort what he's doing. That's the prime mechanism for attacking someone. They distort his motives or his intentions. Because virtually, it's very hard. Anything you do, if it's significant and it's controversial, always lends itself to different perceptions. Obviously, you see that. You know, you go to every courtroom, every court. The lawyer could take any set of circumstances and twist it around. So certainly. But the point is, the answer always is that I can't base myself on what people are going to think. I just have to do the right thing. So if this is the right thing, the argument of Moshe would seem to be a strange argument. Lama yama mitzrayim would seem to be a strange argument. Because, first of all, one has to ask, what difference is it? What do I care what Mitzrayim says? We've just gotten finished with them. I think they were smitten with the 10 makos, then they chased after them. They had their chance. So it's a little bit strange that Lama Yom and Mitzrayim. But also, it's not just that. But what are we... All right, let's assume we do care what they'll say. But what they're saying is a falsification. Because it's not true. The truth is that God... if God is going to destroy them, it's because... that they deserve destruction, not because God there was anything lacking in God. That's my question. Alright, so I'll give you a few seconds to think about it. I'm still here, okay? Guys?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me know. You still have the same three guys?
No, we have five now.
Alright, I'm just So, again, see if just wanted to know that you heard the question. You know, if you don't agree with it, let me know. And
I was thinking that really, this is the perception here is the entire process, beginning from the Makos to Har Sinai, and then was a singular process, beginning with the Makos, and demonstrates to the world the Yedias Hashem. But that was lacking because the end purpose of that, the end goal, was to come to Eretz Yisrael.
So
when the Mitzrayim sees that they didn't actually make it there, so then the effect of the Makos and the Yedias Hashem is lacking. That's ends up becoming a Chilul Hashem. That's what Moshe is saying. He's saying that their perception is, they're not going to say that, oh, Bnei Yisrael was wrong. They're going to say that it's lacking in God's ability to take them out, because the Makos were very nice, God has some power, but that doesn't demonstrate the Gevuras Hashem.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, so you see from this, I agree. You see from this that this goes back to what I said before. What I warned against before, that when we read things like this, that is, like you read about the Marvel, so, and the fact that God regretted that he created man. I mean, the Torah is using very strong language. So the next thought that comes up in a person's mind is that, okay, God failed. Then he has a problem. How can God fail? Now, I've explained to you, if you understand the phenomena, you know, of free will, so then it's not a failure. There's no such thing. God can't fail. Now, the same thing is it's similar. When a person would see something like this, so that's the natural inclination, that he would say it's a failure, that God that chose his people set up a nation and then now he's destroying them. So then why did he pick them in the first place? So the answer is that it's based upon the phenomenon of free will, that even after God selects you, you still have free will. However, you see over here, now you see that when Moshe is citing the reaction of the Mithrim, you can ask my question. So what do I care about the Mithrim? They're wrong. If they will let them study the phenomenon, they'll find out. You do see something from this, and that is to say that Moshe is saying that if you want to have a system, if you're going to have a system of Torah, the way that God interacts with the world can't presuppose people on the highest level. It's precisely because people are not on the high level. That's why you need a Torah. If people were on the proper level, you wouldn't need a Torah. They're rational. You know, people would be rational. They wouldn't follow their emotions. They would seek out knowledge. So human reason could discover. There were great philosophers that were able to discover not the Torah, the specifics of the Torah, but the correct of the Derech HaChaim. Or, I mean, let's say we need a certain amount of guidance, certain issues that human reason couldn't discover. Let's say creation or creation ex nihilo, creation, you know, Yesh Me'ayin, and so forth, so God can reveal some basic truths. And God revealed the Shev Mitzvah Sinei Noach through prophets. So it would seem from that God revealed truths to Adam HaRishon, the Shev Mitzvah Sinei Noach, and to Noach, that would seem to indicate that there has to be a certain amount of revelation. I mean, I just thought of this as like a separate issue. Things are just, you know, coming into my mind as we speak. I mean, it's theoretically, you know, this is a question, I think Sadia Gaon raises this question, that why is there a need for a Torah since God endowed man with the Telem Elokim, with reason? If people think, there have been great thinkers, people think logically and analyze life in an intelligent way, they'll come to the rational conclusions of the Torah. The basic conclusions. The specifics, of course, you're not going to come to a specific system of mitzvot and so forth. But the underlying ideas that the mitzvot are supposed to achieve and how a person should live his life, great thinkers arrived at the same basic truths, even though they couldn't work out a system like this. So then the question is, why do you need revelation? It would seem that a certain amount of revelation is needed. You see, you have the phenomenon of the Shev Mitzvah Sinei Noach. So those are certain truths that would be, I'm not saying impossible. I mean, Avraham Avinu discovered the truth, the underlying truth. But you know, until the time of Avraham Avinu, that's Avraham is an exception to the rule. So God revealed the basic truth in the Sheva Mitzvot Tzeinah. But apparently, the plan of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was that mankind would never achieve its objective left to its own device. That's the whole idea of Pesach, by the way. The whole idea that God has to intervene. You know, formerly it was Bekel Shakai, but now it's Shmi Hashem. That is to say that revelation, that God is entering into the human situation in an entirely different kind of a manner. The nature, the quality, you know, the chola mofsim, you know, the types of mofsim and osim, a particular force or an object or an amulet, that kind of thinking. Because you're taking away from God. You're saying that there's other things out there. Right. I mean, the ayin hara, the red bindle and so forth. That's the derech of Avodah Zarah, 100%. Yeah, question?
I think there's another question you can ask by Aaron. Is the Torah says he's a Rodet Shalom, it seems he had an insight into people. He was able, when he was making peace between husband and wife and everybody else, that it seems he had some kind of insight into people. Yet here, he seems to not see the end goal of their request. When they say, make us an Elohim Asher Yilech Lefanenu, that the end of it, it seems obvious that it's going to deteriorate into Avodah Zarah.
Well, one second. You can't say it's obvious that it's going to... That's not fair, I mean, to Aaron. Well, what do you mean? It's obvious. It wasn't obvious.
Well, I don't mean obvious as far as that, but that it seems that's the...
Are you trying to make a connection between the fact that Aaron was the one who was a Rodei Shalom and the fact that they went to him at this point in time?
No.
Is that what you're trying to say?
No, I'm trying to say that it seems...
It's not a bad point. I don't know. It's interesting. It's curiosity. Did they go to Aaron simply because they viewed him as being second in command? Or no, because they knew that Aaron was the Rodei Shalom? There's some truth to what you're saying, by the way. I don't know if it's the cause over here, but there is truth that the masses will generally look to the leader that they feel a connection with, that he really understands them and their emotions, their emotional needs. Aaron had established himself as the one who understood the emotional needs of the people. That's why he was really more beloved, in a way, than Moshe. At the Torah point, right, you know, we pointed that out, that, you know, Vayifku also called B'nai Yisrael, but when he died. But by Moshe, it says Vayifku also B'nai Yisrael. So Rashi points out that when Aaron died, everybody, men, women, because he was always involved in creating Shalom. So he was really more the man of the people. Now, if you want to say that they sensed that, and therefore they went to him because they sensed that he'd be more sensitive and so on and so forth, that's okay, you know, nothing wrong with saying that. But I can't say that for sure. You don't know that for sure because it could simply be that they viewed him, he was the negative in power, the second in power.
No, that's not my question. My question is that since he seems to have an insight into the psyche, that he could understand that what people's emotional states were, that it would seem that he should have seen that here they're leaving Mitzrayim, steeped in Avodah Zarah, and now they want to go back to the original...
Holly, you're questioning what Aaron should have done?
Yeah.
Okay, we didn't really focus on that at this point. We didn't really focus on that.
With the machlokas, Rashi Rambam?
It's part of the machlokas, but you're right. If you're going to say, like Rashi, that it was really Avodah Zarah from the start, because Avodah Zarah is not just in who you identify as the deity. Even if you believe in God, you can still be involved in Avodah Zarah if you relate to God through a physical object. So that's the, you know, if that's the case, the way Rashi learns, so then Aaron knew what it was from the start. But Rav Chait explained that. I'll just refer to these things briefly. Rav Chait said that...
Rashi Ramban first? I don't understand that part.
I'm sorry, what?
I don't understand the Machlokas Rashi Ramban first.
Well, we haven't gone through the Ramban. But the Ramban, I don't want to go through Ramban right now. I suggest that you guys go through it on your own. Then we can summarize it. He says that it really was not a Avodah Zarah at that point. But it was something to replace Moshe. They needed something to replace Moshe. That's what I really started out with. That's what it says. He said, Ish Moshe, Jose Sonomayasim, Lo Yadana Mahoyalo. So apparently, they needed some type of a object. I mean,
Isn't that also a Bodhisattva, though?
I'm sorry, what?
Isn't that also a Bodhisattva?
I don't know. It depends. It depends on what the object means to you. It depends what the object means. Now, not every object is a Bodhisattva. If a person makes a sculpture, okay? If he makes a sculpture, because, let's say, somebody that was very, very important and powerful is not here anymore. He's gone. And he needs that sculpture. Now, even though it's usher to do that, right?
Right.
And it's usher because of the Bodhisattva.
Right.
If he makes it, it doesn't mean he's engaged in the Bodhisattva.
Well, certainly philosophically he is.
Well, slow down. But we're not talking now philosophically. We're talking about what's the chait. And Rashi, I mean, if you like, let's be more specific now. I mean, according to that, everything's a Bodhisattva. If a guy wears a red bindle, so that's also a Bodhisattva. That's philosophically.
Right.
You're not going to say that if a guy puts on a red bindle, so then he has to be stoned. I mean, you know, you have to differentiate. Clearly, right?
Right.
Okay, so, I mean, that's what we're doing, obviously. I mean, everything... Even the Ramban is not going to deny that that what they did is connected to that. Obviously, it's connected to that. It led to that. But the question is a question of pshat. What exactly were they when they came to Aaron? That's the problem over there, because you're talking to Aaron. So when they came to Aaron, was there a proposal which clearly, openly, explicitly was a Vodazara or not? Now, according to Rashi, it would seem yes. So then the question is, so how could he go along with it? And the answer that Rabbi Chaik gave was because... His decision was that it was a certain level of Avodah Zarah. It was really a return, but it wasn't a return to primitive Avodah Zarah. It was a return to an intellectual Avodah Zarah on the level of the Enosh and the generation, you know. And he held that was able to contain it to that level, then when Moshe came back, they'd be able to return. That's the way, you know, as I recall, anyways. So that was his mistake, and there's a lot to be said for that, because you see, Aaron is really never punished. Aaron simply recounts to Moshe what he did, and that's it. It seems like But of course, now in general, the Ramban is not learning that it was Avodah Zarah at that point, because he maintains apparently that Aaron would never give in to Avodah Zarah, and it would seem that he would argue that even that any Avodah Zarah. So, therefore, I mean, he doesn't really spell out. There are elements there that are not spelled out that clearly in the Ramban, because he says that, that they just needed something that would go before them, so to speak. But he doesn't really explain. It clearly was a distortion of the role of Moshe, and, it's not that pushy. But how this, I understand your dilemma, Yosef. I understand. And I've struggled with that, to try and figure out, according to that, in their mind, well, what was this calf supposed to be? You see?
Yeah.
Okay. But it wasn't intended to be, what is it? As to the way they looked at it. See, your question, as I said, if a guy made a leader, which you're not allowed to do, and he didn't worship it, gave him a certain feeling of comfort. So you're right. I mean, at a certain level, it's partaking of some type of, crazy idea. That is to say, that as long as the statue is here, he's still with us and whatever, and spirit and all of that. But it's not about his aura. If he doesn't engage in any kind of worshipful practices, if he doesn't believe that this has any supernatural attributes and whatever, so then it's just something which is wrong. Okay. Let me get back to the point. The point then in Lama Yom Mitzrayim, I think basically it's what Mark said. I'm just expanding on it. Is that you see that this is a concession that Moshe is arguing. Now, once you agree to create a system, to establish a system with a particular kind of a people, and you took them out of Mitzrayim. So then, you're defeating the entire purpose that you took him out of its right. But then you must deal, you can't say you're not going to deal with human perceptions. Because that perception is the one that's rooted in the mentality that you precisely were supposed to wipe out. But nevertheless, if you can act in a way which, in accordance with that mentality, which has to be uprooted, it's going to appear like it's a failure, so then we're never going to get anywhere. You can't establish the name of God in the world that way. And that's basically, I think, the argument. In terms, is it the plan? He's arguing with the plan of God. But the plan of God will be one which will be counterproductive, because the whole objective is Kiddush Hashem. Okay? Now, of course, I mean, there's corrupt people. So if they're going to distort, if they're just going to distort, you can't not do the right, refrain from doing the right thing, because people will misinterpret it. You see, but here is a different kind of a misinterpretation. Here is a misinterpretation due to the fact that they haven't been able to overcome a certain mentality at this point. And it's playing right into the mentality. In accordance with that mentality, it's going to be interpreted as a failure. So once you do that, so then the whole purpose is defeated. And already, you know, God, when he intervened into the world, the affairs of mankind, when God revealed himself, so that was the entire purpose of the revelation, was to break the primitive mentality and to bring them to a new concept. So it's going to defeat the purpose of everything that was done. So that's the first argument of Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay?
Yeah.
Hello, guys?
Yeah.
All right, let me see. What time? Let's see. There's one more idea. Okay, I'll have to be a little bit brief. One more idea. Unless you had enough for one day.
No, one more.
One more. I just wanted to point this out. I thought it was interesting, and I'm throwing it out sort of like, what do you think of this? I'll tell you how I'm not going to elucidate. I want to return to these themes. These are very important themes. I mean, the more you guys will look up the Ramban, the Ibn Ezra, and I, believe me, the question of Yosef, as to, according to the Ramban, what exactly, how did they view this calf? If it's not a Avodah Zarah, you know, what did they think it would do? I'm sorry?
I still don't understand Rashi, really, because Aaron is a Mesis.
Aaron is a Mesis?
In other words, what Enosh did, the Dor Enosh, was still a Avodah Zarah. So how can he say that this level of Avodah Zarah...
No, but you understand. What Aaron did, his calculation was that if he didn't intervene, it's going to be much worse. That is to say that there's different levels, that if you can just let it go, and then they'll be lost completely, because if no one is in charge of it, if no one is in control of it, so then it'll descend into primitive Avodah Zarah. There's no way to save them. But you see this many times when people rebel against something. You know, there's a movement for change. We want change in the halacha and the davening, you know, with women's groups and this and that. So, I mean, this is always an ongoing thing. So some people say, no, that's it. We can't accommodate it all. So then, fine. So then the women are going to completely bolt away, and they're going to start their own things, and women can't, there's this and that. But then there's another school of thought, which is a legitimate school of thought. I mean, a lot depends upon how you do it. And then, no, let's listen to what they have to say, and let's find out what's legitimate within halacha, and we won't throw them out, and we'll be able to... You know, let's say women's learning. We'll open a place and women will learn, and once they see that we're really concerned about them and this and that, so then we'll teach them the true ideas and we'll be able to control it. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, I would say that Aaron the same thing. That he saw that this is a tremendous danger and this could destroy the whole nation. So if he would just say no, forget about it, so then he'd have no control over the direction. But if he would get involved in it, he held that he'd be able to control it. That's why he got, you know, he'd be able to control it. It was a risk. It was a gamble. And it would prevent it from becoming a type of Avodah Zarah, which would be, you know, irrevocable. That type of thing. So, I mean, that's the defense for Aaron, so to speak. All right?
Well, couldn't you give a simpler defense for Aaron?
I can't hear you. What?
Couldn't you give a simpler defense for Aaron?
I don't know. Can you give a what?
Couldn't you give a simpler defense for Aaron?
Well, what's that?
Couldn't you just say, I mean, Pshat seems to be in the Pesukim, that he intended for the thing never to be served. In other words, the whole thing was just a delay tactic.
I know that. But that's to me, yeah, obviously it's simpler, but, you know, you, 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 In point of fact, you know, he said Chag Hashem Machar. He himself said Chag Hashem Machar.
I mean, at the very end, he did.
It's hard to say that he's just going to. It's true. Listen, he didn't know.
Right.
Yeah, you have to understand like this: that when a person prepares a plan, of course, he's hoping that Moshe will come down quick, and the whole thing will stop. That's for sure. I mean, I'm not going to deny that. But he also has to be prepared. Well, what happens if Moshe doesn't come?
Right.
So, therefore, this defense of Aaron would be one that would cover the possibility, the eventuality that Moshe won't come back that quickly, and still I'll be able to control it. That makes more sense. All right, let me just elucidate, you know, one further thought here, which I find interesting. It says in, might have discussed this, I'm not sure, that when Moshe, the meaning of Moshe in Yisro, I don't know if we did it. One Friday, when Yisro comes out to meet him and to hear.
Yeah, I think we did that with
the Sporno. Okay, right. Vayishlo Reyehu L'Shalom. Did I go over that? Vayishtachlo, Vayishaklo, Vayishlo Ishlo Reyehu. I know I did it in Masoret. I'm not sure if I did it with you guys.
I'm not sure I did that part.
What?
I'm not sure I did that part specifically.
Okay, but it says, the question over there was, it's not clear who kissed who, who bowed down to who. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like kind of vague. If you remember that?
Yeah, I don't think we did that.
Okay. So I can do it. I had my own analysis as to why it has to be Moshe that's really the one that's initiating. But Rashi says that we know it's Moshe. And because it says, Vayishalu ish l'reyehu, that literally it means, and the man, each man asked his friend, and the man asked his friend, you know, L'shalom, it means he greeted him, and the man greeted him. So Rashi says, who is the ish? That has to be Moshe, because the pasuk says, in at the end of Baal Oscha, you know the story of Miriam?
Ish
Moshe. Huh?
Ish Moshe Anav
Mikol Adam. Yeah, the Ish Moshe Anav Mikol Adam. Okay, so I'm not going into the, I'm not going to question the exegesis, whatever. I'm not worried about that. So it says Ish Moshe. I mean, they ask questions because it says the Yisro too. It uses the expression, but whatever the case. So the Ish Moshe. So you know, Ish Lo Ish, that has to be Moshe because Moshe is the Ish. So then it just occurred to me, but in the description of Moshe as an Anav, why does it say V'yo Ish Moshe? Why doesn't it simply say U'Moshe Hayon Mikolatam? I mean, it's like an extra word. V'yo Ish Moshe Anav V'yo Mikolatam. I mean, just simply say that U'Moshe Hayon.
A similar thing by...
I can't hear you. Hello?
Yeah,
okay. Anyways, I just wanted... I don't know about my... You know, I don't know if it's a universal thing over here. But I just wanted to toss something out. Take a look now at Kisisa, where it describes the Achet. You see, that's in Lamed Beis. Vayar Am Kiboshesh Moshe Laredes Minahar, Vayikra Lo'am Al Aaron, and the people gathered on Aaron. Interesting, I mean. So, on so many levels, this is so inductive, the way the pasuk indicates. But as soon as Moshe was gone, I mean, on any level, even if you don't assume that they attributed certain power to Moshe. But just, Moshe was the leader, Moshe was the authority. But you see the call always has tremendous, it's a Musar Haskel, the people always have tremendous emotions, gripes, you know, resentments, and they keep them in check because there's a certain fear of authority. But once the authority is gone, to them, then they gather. I mean, maybe there's something to Mark's point that Aaron didn't have that same type of hold over them. They didn't have the same type of a fear of our own. I mean, even though we've learned in the past that they, you know, rebelled against Moshe too when he was there. But those rebellions against Moshe, Meimariva and everything, they had this, even when Moshe was there, Moshe and Aaron. But those were usually centered around, you know, thirst, food, stuff like that. But not against the, this is different. Anyways, what do you find strange about that pasuk?
Moshe Ha'ish?
Yeah, here it's just the opposite. Here it doesn't say, Yizeh Ha'ish Moshe. Here it says, Yizeh Moshe. Ha'ish, you see? That word Ha'ish is really, really redundant. What it should have said, Yizeh Moshe. You know, Asher Ha'lonu Me'atzrayim. But not even Yizeh, Ki Moshe, Asher Ha'lonu Me'atzrayim. Well, Yadana Ma'ayalo. The word Ha'ish over here is completely... You know, if you want to say the Ish Mardechai, you know, the man Mardechai, so that's one, that's okay. So it's like, when you say that, you're sort of like elevating a person. You know? You could just say Mardechai, but a little time, the man Mardechai, you know, like he was the real Gavra. The Gavra. That is, Mardechai was a real Gavra because he stood up, he didn't compromise, and, you know, it's telling you, it's obviously embellishment. If you just said Mardechai, you know what it's referring to, but fine. That makes sense. In the case of, in the case of Mardechai, I could see it. You know, Yish Mardechai, the man Mardechai. It also can mean, it could also mean that no, that he was just a guy, and nevertheless, because he acted correctly, so he was elevated. Yish Mardechai, ordinary person, was now elevated. So that doesn't bother me, because the term the Ish Mardechai has certain connotations to it, and it's meaningful. You know, fine, it's not a problem. More of a problem is in the case of suddenly by Moshe, via Ish Moshe, I ought to be called Adam. That seems to be strange. Well, what isn't? You know what I mean? Why do we need it at that time? We've already been introduced to Moshe for a long time, so it should simply say to Moshe, Adam. I mean, today I don't understand why it's necessary. Suddenly to say via Ish Moshe. In the case of Mardechai, it's necessary because it's a new phase. He's being appointed. He's being taken out of. He was just an ordinary Ish. He was a nobody, and now he's being appointed to be the top minister. So there, I understand it on a literary basis. In the case of Moshe, it's not so partial. But over here, it's this sentence is very strange. They reverse the order. Kizeh Moshe Ha'ish. They don't say Kiyah Ish Moshe. They could have moved that to word Zeh. And they could have said Kiyah Ish Moshe. Or they simply could have said Ki Moshe. Kizeh Moshe. This Moshe. What does that tell you? What does that indicate to you?
They're focusing on the fact that he was a man.
What?
By the Egel, Claudius is focusing on the fact that he was a man.
No, to the contrary.
See, that man failed him, no?
No, to the contrary. Kizeh Moshe. That they had elevated... You see that part of this problem had to do with a distortion in the relationship to Moshe Rabbeinu. That apparently when Moshe was there, it gave them a certain type of a sense of security. And there's always a danger of projecting powers onto a person, of overestimating a person. We certainly know about that. You know, in our times, Chassidim with Rebbeis and this, you know, Moshe, this is my interpretation, as I said, I'm throwing it out. When Moshe was no longer there, then they were thrown into some kind of a fear, a panic. That's clearly, I mean, the Mefarshim make that point. So as long as Moshe was there, you know, they had a certain assurance, a certain security. Now, Moshe had led them. Moshe performed all the miracles and so on and so forth. The true idea, of course, was not that it was anything in Moshe. It was really the whole relation with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Yeah, but there's always the danger of overestimating the person, because that's, you know, you see that tremendous tendency. So therefore, it says, Kizeh Moshe, this Moshe. They made Moshe into something special. Yehoshua, who appeared to us as a man. That's why the Moshe comes first. You see, like you ask Hasidim that believe the Rebbe is superior, whatever it is. Yeah, he's a man, like you see by the guy with the Jesus thing. Yeah, he's a man, but he's not really a man. Jesus, and he's a man means that he took on human form. I'm not saying that they said this explicitly. I'm just throwing out my... The way the sentence is structured gives me the idea that he said Moshe. This Moshe, Hodesh, who is a different kind of man. Zem Moshe or Ish means he was a different kind of a man. Because you're putting the Moshe before the man. You're not saying that Moshe is just a man. And we see that a man, using his abilities, can reach a tremendously high level. But he's just a man, just another person. That's why in the other place where he wants to show you the Anivas, it's telling you that now, Ish Moshe, the man, he's just a man. Ish Moshe is telling you that Moshe Rabbeinu is just a man. Nothing more, nothing higher, nothing superior. He's just a man, like any other man. And honor of the Odes is telling you about his greatness, his anivus, was humble. But when you're looking at it the other way, it's Kizem Moshe, like this Moshe is something different. Ish, who is a different kind of man. What they're saying is that this is a different kind of a man. You can't look at him as like any other man. And that's why, now that he's gone, we have to make something to replace him. But if it's just a man, so you find another man to replace him. Nobody's irreplaceable. That's what I wanted to... To me, that's the implication of saying Kizeh Moshe Ho'ish, or the Ho'ish Moshe.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. According to the Ramban said that they want to replace Moshe with Diego.
Right.
So it makes sense they have the same relationship with both.
Right, and the language, to me, the language is different. That Kizeh Moshe comes before Ho'ish. So therefore, you're saying it's Moshe. And Moshe... Of course, you're not denying. Yeah, but he was. It's like you see this mentality that people look up to the, leaders like say, yeah, he's a man, but he's not the same. Like it was Paro. That Paro went to denial because he wanted to say that he was like a god. But was he? So is he a man? Well, yeah, he's a man. He has human form. You see what I'm saying? That's the sense that he conveyed to me. But later on, the Torah is correct. I don't know if it's. I mean, I can't say it's collecting this, going directly back to this, but I see a connection. So instead of telling you about really what Moshe is all about, so it's an Ishmael. His utilization of his human powers, but it's all human. What do you think of that? Yosef, what do you think?
Wouldn't another chat be just to say that, in other words, they Moshe Ha'ish means that they were... That they saw that a human being wouldn't be able to give them like the unconditional the level of security that an egg could.
So that's what I'm trying to say. That the I'm focusing on the whatever significance is in the ordering of the words.
Right, I see that.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Rebbe,
you see that? Okay, good. Yeah.
I think the Malbim supports that.
Who, the Malbim?
Yeah.
Go ahead. I didn't see the Malbim.
He says. He says.
I can't. You're going too fast, and it's hard for me to follow.
Yeah, sure.
Just translate the main words there, because I can't follow all the way.
The main words is about Moshe Ha'ish. So they want to say that Moshe is the geshamet, is the body, that the body, that the godliness was closed in.
Closed. The godliness was in Moshe.
Yeah.
I said that's what I was saying.
Right.
He's in Moshe Ha'ish. Does he focus on that? The word is the.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't say. Yeah. He says the Dibur Maspok. He's in Moshe Ha'ish. It says that it was clear to them that they really viewed it as just a body, but it's really like a god, just like some kind of godliness in a body.
So that he's agreeing.
Yeah.
That formulation, Moshe Ha'ish. Is implying a certain godliness to him. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Be interesting to see, check it up, what he says if he has a comment on the Ish Moshe out of the Oz, if he makes any connection. Because now the Torah is making a point. I'm not saying it's there to refute this, but it's not.
Can you see what Rafi is saying also?
There what?
Kizem Moshe Ha'ish. Kemindemus Moshe Hera Lahem Hasatan Shinosim also Ba'avir Rikia Hashemayim. That could be like they viewed him as some kind of they gave him supernatural qualities. That's what it means that what Rashi says Ba'avir Rikia Hashemayim.
Could be, if that's what he means. Yeah. Because it's different. In other words, that's not the Rashi that says that they saw that the Sutton convinced them that he died. Right. That's saying that they showed him the Demus of Moshe in the Avir Hashemayim. That Moshe is some kind of higher being?
Yeah.
Well, if that's the case, then it's in line with what I'm saying, yeah.
Right.
Okay, guys.